Hello there. Today is Tuesday, July the 12th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, another deadly shooting leaves two courtroom bailiffs dead. More protests in cities across the nation over police shootings.
We knew through negotiation this was the suspect because he was asking us how many did he get. And he was telling us how many more he wanted to kill.
An expansion of U.S. troops in Iraq. Also ahead, a smartphone game craze sweeping the nation. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, after enduring a week of violence, police shootings of African-American men in Louisiana and Minnesota, and the shooting deaths of five police officers in Dallas, Texas, the United States continues to see protests in many cities across the country. Last week's high-profile incidents of gun violence involving race have raised questions about how the nation's first black president, Barack Obama, is doing to improve race relations and heal the wounds. The president has said the country has made substantial progress toward racial equality, but still has a lot of work to do. VOA's Cindy Sain has more from the White House.
Protests against alleged police brutality against minorities are continuing in many cities across the United States. Cell phone video last week of two African-American men being shot at point-blank range by white police officers, one in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and the other one in Falcon Heights, Minnesota, already had many Americans upset and on edge. On Thursday, an African-American gunman opened fire on a peaceful protest in Dallas, killing five white police officers. On a trip to Poland, President Obama said the fact that many questionable police shootings are now being captured on video have made more people aware of a long-standing problem.
For African Americans or Latinos in the pre-smartphone age, I don't think that people were not aware of the fact that there is evidence of racial bias in our criminal justice system. It's been well documented, and it's been experienced.
The turmoil is causing some to question the president about his legacy on race relations. He said he would leave that to the history books, but went on to express optimism that things will be better for his two teenage daughters, Malia and Sasha.
And if my voice has been true and positive, then my hope would be that it may not fix everything right away, but it surfaces problems, it frames them, it allows us to wrestle with these issues and try to come up with practical solutions, and that perspective may lead to continued improvement.
Obama travels to Dallas Tuesday to speak at an interfaith memorial service and will be joined by former President George W. Bush. But some prominent African Americans have criticized Obama's response, including PBS TV show host Tavis Smiley. In an editorial for USA Today, he chastised the president for not also visiting Louisiana and Minnesota, where the two African Americans were killed by police last week. But President Obama maintains mending America's troubled race relations will take time, saying, "We plant a seed
for the sake of humanity
so that others might someday sit in the shade of that tree." Cindy Sain, VOA News, the White House.
Standing for what's good and what's right.
Meanwhile, the president is preparing to be in Dallas later today for a memorial service for the five slain officers. As Dallas Police Chief David Brown says, his department is overwhelmed.
Me and my family received death threats almost immediately after the shootings. As a policing family here in Dallas and across the country, there is a heightened sense of awareness around threats we received all over the country. You reported many of the things happening in other cities with shootings at headquarters and other types of things, officers being shot and injured and shot and killed. And so we're at a with a place where we're concerned for our safety.
Well, joining me now to talk about what has been happening, Cheryl Dorsey, retired Los Angeles police sergeant and author of the book Black and Blue. Cheryl, thank you for being here. Chief Brown has suggested that protesters should actually step out of the demonstrations and consider applying for a job with his police force.
Well, I think the point that he's trying to make is one that I certainly concur with, and that is that change will come from the inside. And so rather than bellyache about what's going on, if you don't like the way your community is being serviced, then who better than you to join the police department, put on a uniform, and give the type of service to the people that you think they are deserving of? I want to be clear that those few that are tarnishing the badge are in the minority.
This whole thing really ramped up, obviously, a couple weeks ago, two shooting deaths of black men by police officers within as many days. What was your reaction to those shootings?
I'll start with the first shooting in Baton Rouge. That was a clear-cut example of police officers who are drunk with power. They knew that they were responding to a radio call of a man with a gun. They used terrible, terrible tactics in responding to that call. We see the officer straddling him, and you can see where now it's not about controlling this so-called resisting suspect. It's about punishment. It's about what I like to refer to contempt of cop. You don't do what I say, there's a price to pay. In the audio, we hear the officer say, quit moving, stop what you're doing, or I will effing shoot you. And that's exactly what he did. We don't use our guns as an intimidation tool. That's unheard of and unconscionable.
And then, of course, we have Minnesota and the Facebook video that followed, which went viral.
Thank God she had the presence of mind to do that. She understood that this was something really important that she needed to document. And so I understand, being a police officer, that great deference is given to what we say. We're the authority, and people by and large want to believe our rendition. And so thank God this young woman was able to maintain her composure and document that thing as it was happening real time. And in that instance, again, poor tactics. This was a very minor vehicle code infraction. And I think this officer was clearly unhinged, as we see on the video, how he breaks down afterwards. You don't point a weapon into a vehicle with a small child, because as a police officer, we're taught to be cognizant of the background. But, you know, that officer looked in that car and he saw that little black girl and he couldn't relate to her. He couldn't look at her and think, that could be my daughter. Maybe it's not a good idea to point my gun in a car because it's got a busted taillight.
You believe this was a case of profiling. Does this speak to a bigger issue in this country?
Well, I mean, it is what it is. And don't we see example after example of officers creating an environment to engage black and brown men and now women, and then escalate that encounter to a situation where now they want us to believe that deadly force was the only tool available to them after they created this confrontation?
But as a former police officer, do you agree with the police chief in Dallas who says he doesn't feel that his force and the police in general are supported?
Well, you know, that's his position, and I can't, you know, disagree with his reality. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, and I don't mean to seem callous, I certainly am saddened by the loss of life, whether it's a citizen or a police officer. But listen, you don't feel supported. What about these minority communities that don't feel supported, that haven't felt supported? And it's unfortunate that it's taken the loss of five Dallas police officers to get us here. And I hope and pray I don't want to see any more copycats of people who are so frustrated and disenfranchised that they're taking it out on police officers, because we are very vulnerable when we're out there in uniform. But, you know, folks have had enough. And unless and until police chiefs are willing to admit that there's a problem, and let's talk about fixing it in a real way, I think that we're going to start to see more people acting out. I don't condone it. I don't agree with it. But this is where we are right now.
Do you believe that police just inherently react when they see an African American and think the worst?
You know, I don't want to broad blanket police in general like that. But I think that there are some out there who may have come on these police departments for the wrong reason. I think there are some out there who are not properly trained. I think there are some out there who probably have some psychological issues that may have been overlooked in that initial exam, and that's why they need to have psychological reevaluations. And so if you have police officers who are ill-suited, should not be in that profession, who are scared of black and brown people, you need to get them out of that environment.
President Obama is heading to Dallas. What does he need to say to help the country heal? And what do we as a nation need to do to bridge this clear divide between the police and the African-American community?
I don't want to put the onus on the president. This is not of his doing. I don't know that there's anything he should say or could say to make this better. Certainly what needs to happen is that there needs to be accountability when we have errant officers who are abusing their authority, who are using deadly force as a first resort and not a last resort, who hide under the shield of a police department through the police officer's Bill of Rights and have taxpayers shoulder the burden of these massive civil lawsuits. When that changes, and it's going to take legislation to attack that, when that changes, when police chiefs can stop circling the wagons and telling us that something happened that was not recorded on that video 10 seconds sooner that would have changed everything, when they stop doing that and admit that there's a problem, then we can have a real dialogue about how to fix it. We're on our way to recovery.
All right. We appreciate it. Former LAPD police sergeant and author of the book, The Creation of a Manifesto, Black and Blue, Cheryl Dorsey, thanks again for your perspective. Well, if all of this were not enough, there was another deadly shooting today. A jail inmate trying to escape from a Western Michigan courthouse wrestled a gun from an officer Monday, killing two bailiffs and injuring two more people before he was fatally shot by other officers. Joining me now with how this played out online, social media reporter G. Abby Lee. Hi, G.
Hi, Lori. You're absolutely right. And the Michigan shooting reminded us once again that oftentimes these days, Twitter users are faster at breaking news than traditional media outlets. A woman named Zaria Stark, who tweeted, "There's an active shooting happening in the hashtag Berrien County Courthouse. Please RT," which means retweet. "This is where I work." She sent out a few other tweets following that. She wrote, "The shooting is taking place on the third floor of the courthouse and that she's safe and unharmed."
Unbelievable. What other accounts are you following today?
I'm following Michigan Governor Rick Snyder and the Detroit Free Press. Snyder is on Twitter at, get this, one tough nerd, and he sent out a couple of tweets about the incident. In one of the tweets, he asked his followers to join him in praying for those affected. He also wrote, "The Michigan State Police has secured the scene at the Berrien County Courthouse and started an investigation." The Detroit Free Press is on Twitter at FreeP, but I have to say, although it's based in Michigan, its tweets are not any more informative than those from other major media accounts like Reuters and the AP.
All right, let's talk about Facebook. We've been hearing a lot about its impact this week. What's the reaction like there?
As you know, Facebook allows for a more in-depth discussion than Twitter because you can write more, and a video post by CNN is garnering quite a bit of attention. The most liked comment to that post is by a man named Delmer. He wrote, "Every terrorist group in the Middle East must be laughing at us. This country has become a self-destructing time bomb." Others still blame the media for causing panic across the country and argue the media outlets should wait for accurate details. Lori, back to you.
All right. Thanks so much, G. And you can follow her at G. Abby Lee. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Texas's open carry law makes it hard to tell the good guys from the bad guys. The fight to control the largest Syrian city intensifies. Lawyers confirm attempted suicide by jailed U.S. transgender soldier. The U.S. transfers two more terrorist suspects from Guantanamo. And Twitter CEO's account has been hacked. Find expanded coverage of these stories, much more, at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, this is also a very big week for the U.S. presidential campaign as the candidates get ready to announce their choices for a running mate. Joining me now is chief polling analyst for Politico, Steve Shepard. Now, besides the big running mate mystery, we also hear Bernie Sanders is finally ready to endorse his former rival, Hillary Clinton. Steve, it took a long time for him to get to this point.
Not as long as some of his supporters wanted him to hold out. You'll recall a lot of his supporters wanted him to take the fight to the convention, and we're 2 weeks away from the convention. Hillary Clinton is the presumptive Democratic nominee. She has secured a majority of pledged delegates, but not enough pledged delegates to clinch the nomination without the support of any superdelegates. She only needs a minority of superdelegates, whereas in reality she's going to win the vast majority of them and win the nomination rather easily. But until that is official and those votes are tabulated on the convention floor in Philadelphia, some of Bernie Sanders' supporters wanted him to hold out. That clearly is not going to be the case, though I don't know exactly what he's going to say in Portsmouth. It's safe to imagine that he wouldn't be going there to appear with her if he wasn't going to endorse her candidacy.
He seems so reluctant up until this point. Do you think there will be tension? Do you think we'll notice it?
I think it'll be mostly smiles and unity. I don't think he would do this if he still felt conflicted by this in any way. I do think that show of unity, particularly in New Hampshire is a swing state. It's a place where he can be very helpful. And look, standing next to her, saying that she's the best choice for president, saying that she has his vote, that's going to be very important. It brings the Democrats together a little bit headed into the convention season, which begins next week with the Republicans.
You do believe Bernie Sanders' support is still worth something to Hillary Clinton?
I do. I think it helps her turn the page a little bit from what was a rough week last week with the FBI director coming out and talking about how careless she was in putting her emails on a private server. I think it helps her turn the page from that. Bernie Sanders can be an important validator for her. There are a lot of Democrats or liberal-leaning independents who got behind Bernie Sanders during the primaries, some of whom talked about the fact that they did not want, that they were upset maybe with political elites in Washington and what's going on in Washington and Hillary Clinton, having been in public life since the early 90s when her husband became president, represents that for them. And to have him there as a validator to say, yes, you know, she is part of Washington, she's part of what I really get, but in reality, not only is she far preferable to Donald Trump from Bernie Sanders' perspective, but he is enthusiastic about supporting her. And if he can show that, I think that's going to be important for her.
We've heard that he was booed when he came back to Capitol Hill.
Right. Bernie Sanders, going from his time in the House of Representatives and now in the Senate, he has never been very popular among his colleagues. I think that that's a sign of how impatient some Democrats were for the party to come together. I think there was some impatience there, and I think there are a lot of Democrats who are very happy that this is happening now and not necessarily the final day of the Democratic convention in Philadelphia, that the Democrats can get their ducks in a row and go to Philadelphia united instead of having to worry about happening there.
Do you think Donald Trump is having trouble finding a good running mate because so many people seem to not be interested?
Yes, there's no doubt that Donald Trump has a different problem from Hillary Clinton in trying to find a running mate. He has few people who want to be considered. Now, they do include some sitting governors. Indiana Governor Mike Pence, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie seem pretty eager to join the process. But he does not have the luxury, for example, of most of, other than Chris Christie, most of his top opponents aren't interested in being his vice president. The two people he vanquished at the end to sort of clinch the nomination, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, Ohio Governor John Kasich, neither of them, not only are they not interested in being his vice president, they haven't endorsed him. And here we are in the middle of July. So, yes, he has a very different problem from Hillary Clinton. There are some Republicans who don't want to share a ticket with Donald Trump.
Given what has been happening across this country with the violence and ramped up conversations about racism, there are many people out there that have called Donald Trump a racist. We are hearing that there is extremely heightened security for the Republican National Convention. Should we just expect that there will be mass protest?
As someone who will be in Cleveland next week, I certainly hope things don't turn violent. I think there will be protests. Look, everywhere Donald Trump has gone during this campaign, he's been met with protests. Some of them have been protesting his policies on various issues. The Republican convention is going to generate a ton of attention. I would be surprised not to see those kinds of protests. That said, any political convention, the security for that is handled by the Secret Service. They've known years in advance that the convention was coming to Cleveland and it was going to be held at certain facilities, and so they've been planning for this.
All right. Steve Shepard, chief polling analyst for Politico. We appreciate it. Thanks. The United States will deploy 560 more troops to Iraq to help shape the fight to retake Mosul from the Islamic State following the recent seizure of a key air base near the city by Iraqi forces. Defense Secretary Ash Carter made the announcement Monday during a visit to Baghdad.
This contingent will help the Iraqis establish a logistical springboard for their offensive in Mosul, which Prime Minister Abadi reaffirmed to me that he wants to accomplish this year.
Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb is traveling with the defense secretary, and she tells VOA's Michael Lippin most of those troops will be based in Kira West Airfield.
That is the airfield that the Iraqis just took control of over the last couple of days. The contingent of U.S. forces are going to be helping the Iraqis establish a logistical springboard, says Secretary Carter, for their offensive in Mosul. Keep in mind, Mosul is the big prize in Iraq. Now, Secretary Carter says that this is necessary because they had deployed earlier this year. I was actually with Secretary Carter in Iraq when he approved the deployment of roughly 220 troops to help with Iraqi logistics, getting from Baghdad to Mosul, because that's actually, you know, how much water do you carry? How much ammunition do you need? U.S. officials were helping with that. Now that they're there in the Mosul area, these additional troops will be enablers, helping them to shape the operations in the air with the logistics, and also working alongside the Kurdish Peshmerga that are going to be pushing on Mosul from the north.
Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates, and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election, right here on VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. A new smartphone is creating quite the buzz. We'll talk about it. But first, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is urging the Security Council to impose an arms embargo and targeted sanctions on South Sudan, where violence has resumed. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
The UN chief had harsh words for President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar in a hastily called news conference Monday.
What kind of leadership is it that resorts to deadly weapons and identity politics? Time and again, failed leadership.
Ban Ki-moon urged the two to do everything to de-escalate the hostilities immediately and to order their respective forces to withdraw to their bases. Margaret Bashir, the United Nations.
Well, if you've been on social media in the past few days, you've no doubt seen pictures of little animated monsters in real-life situations, like on a subway or in a restaurant. Joining me now to talk about it, Chris Morris, contributing writer for CNBC.com and Money.com. Hi, Chris. What's going on here?
Well, what's going on is Pokemon Go, and that is a new app from Nintendo. It's the second time they've put out a smartphone app, and this time they used one of their real major character franchises. The Pokemon franchise has sold over 270 million games. Now, you might remember it back from the 1990s. It was all the rage then, and it kind of went down in terms of profile, but it was always a big seller. All the Nintendo handheld systems basically got their strength from Pokemon games. So now it's over in the smartphone world, and it is taking off like nothing you have ever seen. Maybe since like Angry Birds or something like that, we have not seen a game take off quite like this. In less than 2 days, it became not only the top downloaded game, but the top grossing game for Nintendo, for Apple. And that's pretty impressive since it's a free-to-play game. So people are actually paying for extras in this game right now. You're seeing people use this on their lunch break. You're seeing people do it at the store. And it's not just kids. It's also adults, which is kind of notable because you wouldn't expect someone in their 40s and 50s to be playing Pokemon these days.
Wow. Well, it's interesting, too, because Nintendo really hasn't done much in the smartphone world up until now. So why now?
You know, they kind of avoided this. In fact, it was 5 years ago that the president of Nintendo at the time came out at the Game Developers Conference and really just trashed mobile games, said there was no motivation for high-value content in them, said they were cheap, said that they were threatening the industry. And then the Wii U came out, and the Wii U didn't do real well, and Nintendo's stock started to plunge. So what happens is investors realize they need to kind of pressure the company to start making some mobile games. They tried one called Miitomo, and that one did okay. But then we have Pokemon coming out, and it has just been a monster. In 1 day, well, 2 days, in 2 days, last Friday, Nintendo's stock went up 10%. Today, it went up another 25%. So investors are very happy with the performance of this game.
Wow. Any idea how many people have already downloaded this?
Millions of people have downloaded it so far. We don't have exact numbers right now because it's available on Android. It's available on Apple. But what's important to note is this is not a global game yet. It's only been released in a few countries, the U.S., Australia, places like that. There are still some real major gaming hubs that have yet to come. So it's going to continue to take off at a rapid rate.
CNBC and Money.com contributor Chris Morris, thanks so much. You've been listening to International Edition. We are glad you could join us. You can find us anytime at voanews.com or on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thank you so much for being here, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On February 24, 1942, one of the darkest days of the Second World War, radio listeners in Axis-occupied Europe heard this announcement. Daily at this time, we shall speak to you about America and the war. The news may be good or bad. We shall tell you the truth. For nearly 75 years, VOA has kept that promise. It was a promise reaffirmed on July 12, 1976, in the VOA Charter, given by the U.S. Congress and signed into law by President Gerald Ford. The Charter provides, first, that VOA will serve as a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news, and that news will be accurate, objective, and comprehensive. Second, that VOA will represent America, not any single segment of American society, and will present a balanced, comprehensive projection of significant American thoughts and institutions. Third, that VOA will present the policies of the United States clearly and effectively, as well as responsible discussions and opinion of these policies. The Charter's first principle protects the journalistic integrity of VOA News. No official is allowed to pressure a reporter to spin a story in a certain direction. The second ensures that the diversity of America, from sea to shining sea, from Muslim to Christian to Jew to non-believer, from universities to factories to think tanks to Hollywood, is represented. And the third guarantees the world knows where the United States government clearly stands on important issues of the day and why. On the Charter's 40th anniversary, Amanda Bennett, director of The Voice of America, spoke of its enduring relevance.
The VOA Charter has never been more important than it is today. The world really needs a reliable and authoritative source of news and information, which is what the VOA Charter intends us to be.
The Charter remains the Voice of America's lodestar, guiding its mission to present the truth and, as Director Bennett said, to reflect all sides of the American discussion.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
It's